Session number 7304, reel 12.
Colonel King, reel 12. You mentioned that the enemy position at Omar Nuevo was protected by mines, and that a number of tanks were brewed up by them. Were there infantry mines as well?
No, I don't think so. No, there were not.
And you also said, I think, that a patrol had been out looking.
Yes, two previous nights.
So presumably the enemy had laid these mines hastily the night before the attack.
No, I think not. The only means of looking for these mines in those days was prodding, going along, prodding with a bayonet. Whether the patrol actually, there was a wire which wasn't the start of the minefield or not, one doesn't really know, and they thought it was and started prodding and there was nothing there. Or whether they actually got into the minefield and didn't find any mines or not, again, we don't know. Because there was a certain amount of wire around there, single strands of wire lying on the ground, some half on sticks and things like that, which we noticed afterwards. So they may have not been in the minefield at all. You see, first of all, they were entirely dependent on the compass. You went out on a compass bearing, you came back on a compass bearing. You measured the distance on the map and you had to then sort of pace it out on the ground. That's the only way you could tell where you were. There was not a thing to be seen. They didn't even see these sticking out watchtowers. So whether they went to the right place or not, I don't know. But anyway, the report came back, two nights running, no mines.
And you also mentioned that there was wire, that the carriers went through a gap. What sort of wire did they have?
On the what might one term the it was barbed wire, not dammit, as far as I recall. It was not dammit wire, just fences there. It's difficult to picture really, because it obviously this position had been there for years. I mean, been prepared and been there for years. And so really, I mean, quite frankly, this wire had been put up years before, rusted in the desert nights, things like that. Other wire had been put up, so it looked a bit of a mess, what there was. It wasn't any nice and regular, but the one thing that was regular was the wire fence that came, the north-south wire fence that came all the way from Kibbutzo all the way right down to Beer Schaffhausen. That was the frontier wire. That was there.
Was that frontier wire a military obstacle?
It was a pedestrian obstacle, yes. But there were gaps in it because people had cut gaps over the years, the chunks out of it. It had been repaired in some place, in other places not. Why they'd ever bothered to spend this vast amount of money in putting the frontier wire in, I just don't know.
Now, before the attack went in, supported by the tanks and the carriers, how had it been intended to use the infantry? Had they been intended to go immediately behind the tanks, using them for shelter and as support? Was that the general plan?
Well, there would... On Omar Nuevo, which was one, what you might call... encampment, defensive position. The actual fact was divided into two. And two one, the plan was to attack both these defended localities with two companies each. Namely, one in two leading companies and two behind, and then the ones behind to go through and onto the end, so to call, of their defensive position. That was the idea, And with various detachments of mortars and things like that moving with the companies in close support behind. That was the idea. Now, the things didn't turn out quite that way, as it never does in a battle. It only takes one company to held up, to be held up, and another company then put through, and so on. The trouble was that the troops debussing were 400 yards short of the enemy. Debussing just shows that a reverse slope was like, got up to 400 yards. That's where they debussed. Now, as I say, there was an imaginary start line on the ground. That's about all. Which was just worked out from the distance, we thought, from the map. Which we had a map, mind you. I'm sorry, we had quite good maps, what they called overprint maps, showing the enemy defences, which were taken from air photographs and put onto a map. You know the ones. And they were quite good. And from that map, one had worked out where the start line should be. Now, the only snag was that because of the lack of height, if you like to put it, in the Western Desert there, it is terribly difficult to tell whether a thing is, because of the contours, don't show it on the map, whether it is 20 foot below or 5 foot below the next contour. I mean, rarely you pick up a contour line, there isn't any. For virtually feet on the map, so you don't really know where you are. And so you imagine your start line, woof, put it there, and there. This was where, A, debus behind it, cross it, over. Virtually the debussing point was the start line. Well, what happened was they virtually went on the thing there until they were shelled. Now, that was 400 yards away from the enemy positions, but you still had 400 yards of reverse slope. And ashamed. People debussed because obviously you didn't want to get caught near them. Hitting them. And that's what happened. And up they went, up the slope. Tanks within them, in with them, so to speak. Not so ahead of them.
The tanks were travelling with the infantry vehicles, and the idea presumably had been that if things went well at a given point, the infantry would debus, form up behind the tanks and follow them in.
Well, yes, not form up behind, spread out behind. Because, I mean, they weren't using the tanks as shelter.
They weren't?
No, no. They were on either side. The tanks were with them. And, in fact, as far as I remember, in the main, the tanks were there and there, so to speak. Namely, in two...
The flanks, then.
That's right. On the
flanks. So it would be tanks on the flanks and then infantry between.
Okay.
But they would be working in combination with each
Indeed.
Other.
Mm. Indeed. No, it didn't work out that way, as it happened, because the tanks got stuck. Now, this is the worst thing, because there's nothing, when you're with the tanks and you're plying along quite gently and you're roughly, they're just ahead of you or with you and you're on either side of them like that, you suddenly, when the tanks start going up, and they have supporting you. It's one's heart goes down, you know, feel a nasty feeling in your stomach. Anyway, I think eventually, I mean, the artillery was coming down, the tanks were being knocked out. We lost four carriers and six tanks went. Whether they were all from minefield or not, I don't know, but the six tanks were on the minefield, woof. Some might have been hit by 88s and some blown up by mines. Four carriers had gone up. The soldier was feeling a bit lonely. And there was a lot of fire coming down. Hold on.
Small arms as well.
At this time, until they bearded the crest, so to speak, because there was really many artillery fire. Then they bearded the crest and then down he came. Small arms fire like hell. And the crest as such was nothing, just a tiny reverse slope like that. And the first thing the enemy must have seen, gently, for the last 100 yards moving up towards, there must have been heads and then shoulders and then up to the waist and then a full body, but it was so gradual, that slope, as to be infuriating, because we, 400 yards away, couldn't see a sign of an enemy 400 yards away. Not a thing, except these watchtowers.
And the watchtowers were used for directing the fire.
Well, there was a funny sort of thing there, yeah, ladders. Thing there. It wasn't quite like a prisoner of war camp watchtower. It was a sort of a chap got up on the top of a couple of ladders on a pole.
How far down the reverse slope from the crest were the enemy
positions? Don't know. Don't really know. I'm guessing. I would think. Where I was on the crest, it starting 200 yards less, perhaps. 200 yards less.
What sort of positions were they? Were they dug in?
Absolutely dug in. As I have got some, I wish I could show you a photograph of me standing beside one. You won't see it. Because not only was it dug in, they removed all the spoil. And so their trenches, with no spoil at all in front or back. It was flat. And so it was just virtually a trench or a hole or whatever it was in the ground, with no spoil at all. And extremely difficult to see. I mean, as you came down, the soldiers couldn't see. All they could see was chap's head perhaps firing at him, or a machine gun stuck out of the top, or whatever it was, light machine gun, heavy machine gun. That's all. And over in the distance, on a little bump, there was this big, this 88 gun, which you could see. And there it was. And this was one that was doing a whole lot of damage. This German 88 with the tanks.
Was it a single gun?
This one was a single gun, yes. Single gun. I remember it quite distinctly. It was on his platform. Had a sort of trench around it where obviously it was a sort of fire trench for people defending it, the gun, and there was a gun cell. And the extraordinary thing was that gun was knocked out. Not captured, knocked out. A tank got it. The most, brilliant shot or lucky shot, whichever way you like to look at it. But it went bang and it hit it straight on the breech, side of the breech, like that. Of the gun, put it out of action. Couldn't use it. Damaged the gun.
How extensive was this enemy position you were attacking? What sort of strength of the garrison, do you think?
Garrison, I can't tell you. I would think that we picked up in the end. We took 300 prisoners. 600 prisoners. One company took 300 prisoners, another company took 300 prisoners, there's 600 for a start. And the total number of people, I think, taken in the whole position, there was something in the region of 1,200 prisoners as well. And they had a hell of a lot of many casualties, too. The position, the trouble was that... we had to try and get that position by last light. There was a certain amount of urgency. Now, we hadn't started till that afternoon, basically something about midday onwards, it started the party. And, of course, in the desert there, it's dark by 5:30. And the last part, as you know, in deserts there, your last sort of half an hour of light, it goes damn quickly. I mean, you don't get a twilight of any form at all. And so one had to get it. And if one didn't get that by last light, it meant really the next party, the next start of the operation onto Libya and Omar, or the 4th, 16th Punjab Regiment who were moving through, couldn't really carry on. Although they were going to go through at night, actually, onto that position. But they had to have a firm base, which was taken, because they had to come through us and swing right.
So how did you manage to take the position?
Well, as I said, there was one... the four companies in the end, eventually, and we got the first two companies did get their objective. The one on the right had this tremendous cash. The next two companies got their objective, all in all. And this one little bit held out in the area of this machine gun, which in the end we managed to rustle up this tank, and it went straight over the top, just put its head over the top and blasted this machine gun out with its two-pounder. And that was the end of that. And that position was then taken. So eventually by, I think, it was... if you'd like to pause a moment, I will just... eventually, the position was captured by 5:30 that evening. And it then was a question of trying to round up the odds and bits of things. The Italians were easy. Easy. I mean, when they're beaten, they're beaten. They came in like mad. Germans wasn't quite so easy. We had to virtually round dig them out.
Once you come over the crest, how did the infantry go about making their attacks on the Italian positions? What sort of formation did they use?
Oh, spread out. Spread out. Extended
skirmish,
line. Extended
line.
Yeah. Absolutely extended order. I suppose section 20 yards, section frontage, I suppose.
And were they using sort of standard fire and movement tactics, or
no,
just rushing forward?
No, no. Thing in the desert we very seldom used was because of the lack of cover. But once you're down, you're down. It's awfully difficult to get people up again. And so in the desert, when you went into the attack, you stayed up. And this is where you do get casualties, no doubt about it. But there's no fire movement, because you can't gain from cover to cover. There isn't any cover. This is the problem.
So you just have the whole line moving
Absolutely.
Forward.
Absolutely, that's exactly what happens.
As fast as possible.
Yep.
Now, you say the Italians were easy. Does this mean they didn't resist to the last?
No, they fought damn well. But, you see, they had the Germans with them.
Did you have to carry positions by bayonet charge at all?
I'm not sure. The company had lost all its officers and was commanded by a chap that we tried to get a VC for, but there was no evidence. In those days, you had to get officer evidence for a VC. And we had no officers left in that company. We got a sergeant major, they wouldn't accept it. He was the chap, only a sergeant major left. And he was the person who went in. He was wounded three times, and he went in, and he was actually killed within about 15 yards of the trench. The company having got right through, this was the last trench position he was shot there, Covington. Now, at the time, you could see, I went with the CO along there, you could see where they fell like that. They had bayonets fixed. Obviously, some had been cleared. The trench had been cleared with the bayonet. Whether people had been bayoneted or not, I don't know. Or whether they had given up beforehand, thrown their arms in the air, the Italians, I don't know. Because, quite frankly, at that time, one wasn't, you know, examining the bayonet to see if there was blood on it. But obviously, the bayonets were fixed, and they were perfectly... And they could have gone in with the bayonet. They could have gone in with the bayonet. I don't know. I can't answer that. One was brought up in those days to have that, because one didn't have the same number. One's got a recall of submachine guns in those days, as one does now.
I see.
Grenades, yes, they were used. We had one famous chap, Corporal Talmy. Yeah. And he silenced one of the enemy guns, 75. It was only a 75 millimeter gun, like that, with a couple of grenades. They were quite extensively used. They weren't liked much, because they were still they were 36th grade. And of course, you throw them in a trench. provided you're out of the way yourself, I mean, they cause a hell of a lot of havoc.
How far could you throw one of those things?
Now, 30 feet? I wouldn't think, possibly a bit more. Possibly more, 40 feet, something like that.
Did the defenders use grenades to try and break up the attack?
Yes, they used the Italians used a small grenade, not as lethal. They didn't land very close to you. They didn't do an awful lot of damage, except put little bits of thing into you. They wouldn't, not like the 36 grenade that we used. And the Germans, of course, had the stick grenades, which are devils. Again, they were. Pretty nasty if they landed near you. Very nasty indeed if they landed near you. But again, they're not again as lethal as the 36 grenade. At least I don't think so. And I don't know whether the Germans used them, though. There weren't a lot of German infantry. There were a lot of German machine guns.
What about mortars? Did the enemy have those as well?
Yes, they did. Can't recall them, you know. I remember the mortar firing on us as we went into the attack. Can't remember any mortars actually being captured, but there may have been.
What then did you do once you'd actually taken the objective, once the place had been cleared?
Well, the first thing to do was we had to make certain that there's a defence area there, because we quite expect a counterattack. There was a Panzer division just down beyond Bierschefersen, which was no distance at all, nowhere at all. The enemy was still waiting for them to react. This was the first sort of one of the first assaults in that area. And there was a perfectly good Panzer division around the corner. And we were waiting to react. So the first thing we had to do was get our fences going, cracking.
So how did you do that? You occupy the enemy position?
Well, we occupied the enemy's position because the first thing was there. And in actual fact, very fortunately, it was an all-round defence. One way we didn't have to face necessarily was where the other battalion were in the process of attacking.
That's a passing through battalion.
That's passing through. Mm.
Roughly speaking, was it laid out, this all-round defence, on the same sort of basis
same
as your
sort of
own?
Principle, yes. Mm. Yes, it was. We'd hoped it wouldn't be. And that is why, instead of attacking, I should have mentioned this before, we didn't attack from the east towards the west, which was the thing. We had moved round and we attacked from the west towards the east, I think. Yes, we did.
You were hoping to outflank them.
Yeah.
What about the prisoners? What sort of troops did you capture and what sort of attitude did they have?
They were, as I said, they were made in Italian, some German. The Germans are arrogant, you know, didn't say much. Italians, again, quite pleased to be taken prisoner in the end. They had been looking after themselves. They were fed really well and all the rest of it. One of the things that struck us was the immense amount of bottled water, Vichy water type there. And the Italians, obviously, that's what they all had. They had Vichy water. The Germans had slightly different rations, the Italians, they seemed to have. There were some German rations there, in German positions there. The Italians had Italian rations, which they had a sort of tinned meat, which wasn't particularly pleasant, and sacks of macaroni. Sacks of stuff we picked up. The snag about the positions were there were fleas. Now, some people didn't worry. They didn't know they were bitten. But if you're a person the fleas like and bite, they bite. And by God, the fleas were absolutely unbelievable. Whether that was due to dirt or not, I don't know.
Had you suffered from vermin before in the box?
Not that, no. In the box, no. Funnily enough, we hadn't. We all had... There was an issue, an army issue, flea powder, in fact, to sprinkle around one's dugout and things like that. But obviously the Italians never had anything like that because they are absolutely infested with fleas. I remember the battalion headquarters or dugout trench we moved into. That was absolutely full of fleas.
What happened to these prisoners? Were they just marched off?
We just sent them back with the brigade headquarters thing. We just handed them over to that, and they sorted them out. Honestly, by that time, all we wanted to was get rid of the bloody people out of our position. They were just a nuisance to us, you see.
What about your wounded? Were they also evacuated?
No, this is a important point. Now, there was a certain amount of developments after the Sitiawan battle. The reaction of the enemy was pretty damn quick. Not immediately that night. In that night, because of the 4th, 16th Punjabs going through, and ourselves being there, in moved a field ambulance. An Indian field ambulance. British doctors, and some Indian doctors, moved in there. Well, we'd had a lot of casualties, and our RAP was absolutely... The poor old doctor there was working like an absolute slave. And he was pushing them as quick as he could into the back of the field ambulance. Fortunately, the field ambulance came up and pushed them into that. There's always that inevitable delay when you move a field ambulance from where it was into another position, because whilst it's on the move, it's not very effective, not often in those days. You had to wait till it's got it down on its bottom and started him. And we pushed the thing there, and the doctors worked all night, working on the casualties there. And those that we could were evacuated. And the army evacuation was pretty good that day. I mean, for example, they moved back to another stage. From there, quite where, I don't know, and were flown to hospitals in the Canal Zone and Cairo and places like that. Because the chap in the regiment who was wounded there, Major Shinquin, he was the chap who afterwards was the chap who got held up by this machine gun and mortar position, which the tank sorted out eventually. And I took him back in my Land Rover at that time. I took him to the doctor. He'd been shot in the through the chest, and he was, every time he took a breath, I mean, it was bubbling out of him. And he went straight into the field ambulance. Actually, I took him straight to the field ambulance. They patched him up, and he was flown out the following day. He went back in an ambulance somewhere, and then they flew him out the following day back to Cairo. And this would happen to a lot of our wounded.
I understand you had fairly heavy casualties.
Yes, we did. We had... Oh, dear, oh, dear, oh, dear.